Okay, just a few more people just coming in. I always feel I need to say this at the start of this talk, because TechEd is a show where we got a good mix of developers and also IT pros. So this is about networking, but not the networking that IT pros are really all about. This is a developer's talk. So if you feel that perhaps you want to go and watch something else that might be better if you're an IT pro, obviously now's the time to go, and that's absolutely fine. So, great. All right, there's one. Yeah, great. Okay. So, I don't need to make that clear because, carry on. Yeah, go and find a nice sort of Azure-y thing or something like that. Yeah. whatever that stuff is. You know, I don't know. Yeah. Sorry? Is that right? Yeah, well, there is. That's right. It's this. So, this is about networking. It's a lightning tour through loads of stuff I hope you'll find interesting. I have to say, you know, this TechEd, you just have the best food of any show I've ever been to. But, like, it's pretty heavy lunch, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, session after lunch, after, you know, with all that food, it's going to be, at least it's not too warm in here, which is cool, which is good. But, you know, if you want to have a sleep, that's fine by me. But it's going to be a lot of very fast pace, going through a lot of little things. Hopefully you'll find something of interest in there. If you don't know me, I'm responsible for quite a lot of video training videos that are up online on Channel 9, and also they've been turned into MVA courses. So there's the Windows Phone 8.1 Jumpstart, which was the last series we recorded back in April, and I've done Jumpstarts for all the releases of Phone before that. So if you've got a spare 2.5 days, this is a good place to spend it. Right, so in this session, I'm just going to first of all talk a little bit about the basics everybody needs to know as a developer when you're working over networks. I'm going to do a quick look at Azure Mobile Services. I'm sure many of you, you know, have seen it all and are familiar with it. But I want to, you may have missed the tools they built into Visual Studio and make it really easy to set this up. So I'm just going to do a quick worked example of that. We're going to look at roaming data, because this is a key thing about universal apps and the ability to share data across your phone app and your tablet app, in fact across all a user's personal devices. So how many of you in here actually have like two or more phones? Yeah, a good number of hands. Yeah, and you've probably got a tablet as well and a laptop as well. So, you know, we've all got these devices that are just increasing more and more. Hopefully before too long we'll have a watch as well, who knows, we'll see about that. And then I'm going to go a little bit deeper into it. So the theme about those ones is kind of using, when you've got these very convenient higher level abstractions that we've put into the platform to make it easy to do certain scenarios, then use them. So that's what roaming data and Azure Mobile Services is all about. Yeah, sure, you can build a custom backend in Azure and build it all up yourself and plug all the bits together, but why not use a backend as a service that's just an easy wizard to get the thing up, and it will suit quite a lot of needs for a high proportion of mobile apps. Same with the settings data. But if you need to get down and real sort of low-level networking, then I'm going to have a quick look at the HTTP client. It says authentication. No, actually, what I'm going to do then is going to switch tack slightly. So apologies for the error on that slide. I'm going to switch tack and we're going to look into Bluetooth LE. So networking, but as well in a different kind of thing. So I've got an example with a smart luggage tag. So you can see how the new APIs work in Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 for talking to smart devices. Right, so the basics. This comes as a surprise to some people, but mobile devices are not always connected. So I guess probably here in Auckland, the network's pretty good. But New Zealand's a beautiful country, very mountainous, similar to where I live. I live in North Wales in the UK, and I've come over especially for this show, which is really nice, and to visit my brother who's in Australia. So, but, you know, in those kind of areas, good quality bandwidth is kind of a luxury. So you're up in the mountains or out in the remote parts, as I'm sure there are plenty of places in New Zealand, you may not have a network at all, or it might be poor quality. And as a mobile app developer, you always need to keep that in mind. You know, it's easy to sit with an emulator on a laptop, and it's connected to super fast broadband, and you're creating this nice app, and it's pulling stuff off services, and it's super slick. Yeah, just remember though, it's not always like that in the field, so you need to design for that. And also, different networks have different costs associated with them. Some of them are free, some of them are costly to the user. So I'm going to look a little bit at the DataSense API. So you can create an app that is aware of that and is aware of whether the network is costing the user money to use. So you can kind of give them different scenarios depending on whether it's free or not. And also, things about, you know, networking is there's lots of things about efficiency, like compression and preloading stuff. And we've got some interesting things I'm not going to talk about in this thing, but you know, look at push notifications on the Windows Phone platform now. So you can now send a raw notification from your back end, and instead, in Windows Phone 8, backtrack, you know, you could send a notification, it would be a toast or a tile update. And you could send a raw notification, which was only of use if the app was actually running at the time, wasn't suspended. And then you could send it raw notifications. And I looked at these, and I could never see the point of them, really. I mean, you know, you could have the app call home, and then you could just sort of send it stuff with raw notifications. But pretty narrow use cases. In 8.1, what you can do is send a raw notification from the back end and use that to trigger a background task. So if you think about, you know, a news app, the old scenario is you get a pop-up on the top of the screen, a toast notification says breaking news, so whatever, this sort of thing. And you tap on the breaking news notification, it launches the news app, and the first thing you see is the news from 2 days ago, which is the last time you looked at it. And then you get the kind of the, you know, the pie thing, and then finally it refreshes and you get the news that you were actually interested in. Well, think about this now. If you've got a notification coming from the back end, you use it to launch a background task. So the user hasn't had anything interruptive yet. And in the background task, you go back to the server, and you pull the details for that news story, you cache it, then you pop up a toast, again from your background task, user taps on the toast, app launches, it's already up to date. Much better user experience. So it's little things like that when with networking and thinking around these things, pre-caching stuff can make a lot of difference to the user experience. We've got loads of stuff in our platform that make networking in a general sense easier. So backend as a service, the Azure mobile services, easy way to build out your backend. You've got a database, you've got a RESTful service, you've got authentication, you've got notifications, all that stuff built into it. And you can build out, you know, like I said, if that doesn't fit your needs, you can build out a service through using all the web roles and workers and all the queues and all the other great stuff that Azure gives you. But in a lot of cases, Azure Mobile Services is going to be what you need. We've also got Azure Notification Hubs. And this is a great, another cool service in Azure, which is a service that allows you to send notifications, and not just to our platforms. So the whole of Azure Mobile Services and Notification Hubs is cross-platform. It'll send notifications just as happily to our devices as it will to iOS and Android. So that's a really cool service you can make use of in a cloud service that really takes the pain out of that kind of application where you're supporting cross-platform clients. We've got a background transfer service. So if you need to transfer files from your client app to a server, or vice versa, you want to pull files from a service and bring them up onto the device so you can use them directly from the app, we've got a background transfer service. Sure, you could write some HTTP code and go off and try and pull stuff back and stream in stuff and do all the, you know, the chunking and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you could do that, but why bother? We've done it for you. It's in the background transfer service, so you can use that. It's an easy way of transferring services and the files. And the cool thing about it is, if the device crashes, not that our devices ever crash, of course, but if the user pulls the battery out, shuts it off halfway through the transfer, next time the phone turns on, the OS will restart the file transfer. So it's a persistent service. It'll just take care of it for you, and it will do the work of recovering from failures and retrying, and eventually you'll get your file in the place where you want it to be. We've also got another API called the Web Authentication Broker. So if you need to do OAuth authentication against a backend service, this is a nice little component, a service that handles the UI with the user to take the credentials. So the credentials never pass into your app. You don't have to worry about the security. It's all sandbox, takes care of things for you. And that makes it easy to do OAuth authentication against a backend service. And the other cool thing about that is, in the same way that roaming data does, is that once you've got those credentials in the web authentication broker, it also roams, so it syncs them across the user's other personal devices. So if they enter the creds once on one device, they don't have to then repeat it when they pick up their tablet later on. So the tokens are roamed across devices. So really cool. And of course, if you can't use any of those higher level abstractions, then HTTP client is there for, and it's a very rich API for doing lower level stuff. Right, I'm going to start just with a quick look at Azure Mobile Services. How many of you have built something with Azure Mobile Services? Not too many. That's good. That means this is going to be entertaining for the rest of you. So that's cool, hopefully. What is this thing? So it is a... it's a wizard-driven, very easy way of building out the back-end services for a mobile app. So most mobile apps need some kind of back-end services. They might need to share some data, or you're going to have some RESTful services that are serving up data that's of interest to the app. And it's cross-platform. So it supports iOS, Android, Windows, HTML5, and actually it doesn't say it on there, but also Xamarin as well, Xamarin Android and Xamarin iOS. So it's really, really easy to build out your back-end services. It actually builds on top of, you can have it in Node.js on the back-end or in .NET. In case if it's .NET, then what it generates for you is a web API-driven back-end. And you can customize all there's methods that are doing all the regular, the CRUD operations, the create, read, update, delete operations against your tables in your database. And you can customize all of those. It's got really strong support for push notifications. Great support for authentication. So if you're creating an app and you don't want to write your own authentication system, why not let Twitter, you know, why let them authenticate against Twitter or Facebook or a Microsoft account? Really easy to add that in. And you can also use Azure Active Directory, so you can actually authenticate against corporate credentials if it's appropriate as well. The backend database, out of the box, it's SQL Server, SQL Azure. But we also support Oracle SAP, MongoDB. You can also actually as well now link it through to your database, could be actually on-premise. So you can have the services in the cloud and actually the database is down on your own on-premise as well. So you can link that through. So they keep adding loads and loads of stuff to it. And of course, being in Azure, it's scalable. So it can really scale out to millions, support millions of client devices. And it does have an enterprise-grade service level agreement. Creating one of these things used to be something you did in the Azure portal, but actually now in Visual Studio 2013, they built in loads of tools that allows you to do most of what you need just directly from Visual Studio. You can still go into to the Windows Azure portal and work there, but you don't need to for most things. And you create a mobile service. I'm going to show you this in a minute, so I won't talk too much about this. And then it downloads the relevant client libraries into your app, and then you've got all the methods you need to then communicate with your back-end service really easily. And you can modify all the tables, you can create tables right from within Visual Studio and edit all the scripts that are there to handle those operations. And then you just write some code, just like this, really. You know, you're working with our objects as if they're just in memory. And in actual fact, those objects are out on the cloud on the service. So you just new up a, here we've got an example of a to-do item, and you're going to insert it into a table, and that's all the code you need to actually save it locally, and then sync and write it up to the table in the database in the cloud. And it's really easy to add push notifications as well. So that's really cool. But there's loads more. The authentication is obviously you can have data that's common to all users, but more usually you're going to want to actually have it identifiable to a particular user. You can customize it, and you can have background tasks for repetitive things. But the real cool new feature, this is the bit where I suddenly thought, this Azure Mobile Services, this is really good. Because up until recently, and you remember how I started this talk by going on about how apps need to be offline. Until recently, Azure Mobile Services was an online-only solution. No use at all. I'm sorry, but really? How much use is that? You know, if mobile devices, if you've got maybe you've got a line of business app and you know you're going to be on a Wi-Fi network, then, you know, fair enough, an online solution kind of works. But in general, consumer-facing apps, you need to have offline, and now they have offline. So what they've done is they're using SQLite on the client, and you're working actually against, when you synchronize, you get pull the data down, it's cached locally, you're working against that SQLite database and synchronizing the changes back up to the cloud. So you can work offline and sync the changes when you get a network back. And because they use SQLite, which is industry standard, it still supports all of those clients. So it works on Windows devices and on iOS and Android, HTML. So you've got a great solution for offline as well. I don't know, Rob Tiffany did a talk about this yesterday. I don't know if any of you saw that. So that's really cool. Now then, let's have a look at how it works. Right, I've got a very simple little app here, which is called Taskmaster. And the idea is it's, well, I'll run it up because it doesn't do anything at the moment. We'll just work this on the emulator. And you can create tasks. So we can say tasks, go to happy hour. Yeah, mustn't miss that tonight. And that, of course, is at the hub at 5:30. And then the idea is you sign it. I'm going to sign that to me. And we can then save it, except at the moment there's absolutely no logic on that button, so we've got some work to do. But you get the, just going to add a series of tasks, and then when you go back to this page, what it's supposed to do is list the tasks on there. So we're going to build up some simple functionality against a web backend for this little sample app. So I'm going to start by going into, in here, I can simply right-click on here, and say add connected service. So this is now going off, and I'm signed in with my Microsoft account on this this machine. And now it's going to go off, and it's looking for the, these are the current Azure mobile services I've got up there, but I'm going to create a new one. And I'm going to call it, the Jump Start Demo. And the region, I'm going to create it up in North Europe. I know which doesn't seem logical here, but obviously it's global, doesn't matter where it is. Just because I've already got a database, which... That doesn't look right, actually. Oh dear. Bear with me, cross your fingers for me. I got my, is that right, database? Oh, hang on, that's even the wrong, it's going to fail because that's even the wrong username. And now, of course, it's going off to the cloud and it's going to fail, which is going to take an unfortunate amount of time. Yeah, failed to create. I'm not surprised. Let's try that. That might be the right username. And if we're good, so what we're going to create, you have a database at the back of it, and then you create the RESTful services up in the cloud. My trouble is I have so many subscriptions that I get a bit lost on which one I'm supposed to be using. Even though I did check this out before. Come on, baby. This is the problem with live demos against Azure, so it takes a little bit of time. But then it will fail to create mobile service. That's not good. Let's try that one. And hopefully I'm going to get the right one up this time. Yay, here we go, we're winning. And it will go off. Now, this time it'll work, he says confidently, clutching every bit of wood he can get hands on. And he'll create it up in the cloud, and we'll have our service ready for us to program against. So it's doing all its stuff. This is the same stuff you can do using the Azure Management Portal. Just create it in there, but it's doing it directly from Visual Studio. And come on, come on, come on. It's taking a while, this. Well, good network and everything. Right, we've got a service. So I can now say OK. And now it's adding the connected service to my my application. So actually all it's doing is adding some reference, some libraries in, some NuGet packages. It's going to update a little bit of code in my startup. Loads of, if you look at the bottom left, it's adding a myriad of packages to this thing. Entity framework, yeah, Lord. Web API, EDM, OData, more system.spatial, mobile services backend. Oh my goodness. Right. If this works, it'd be a miracle. Right. There we go. Now, in what it has done is, there's the service. Here in my app.xaml, it's added in, so I added a bunch of references into here, Windows Azure. And also, most importantly here, this is, it's stuck these lines of code in here. So it's actually created me an object, Jumpstart Demo Client, which we can use to talk to our service. And then, so that's, I can now go off into Server Explorer and open expand Azure. You can see all my mobile services in here. And then, here we go, and there's my Jumpstart demo. I just realized I messed up here. I do apologize. Now, what I've done, unfortunately, is I've created a .NET backend, which it's not quite built, not quite running out of the box the way I wanted to. Let's just start over. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Start over here. I'm going to start over. This is not going well. Sorry about this. So this is the portal. Mobile services, I have to just get the right subscription. Go find my bits and pieces. Right, there's my service. And it's completely screwed this up. Right, I'll give this one go. What I'm going to do is back out of this, start over. And then we will and if this doesn't work, then obviously I shall move on, because I've got plenty of other great stuff to show you. Shows Tech New Zealand networking. Right. Actually, this one will just work just fine. I'll try this again. Okay. Now, this time, I'm going to create the JavaScript backend. Add connected service. This is not a great advert of how easy it is to do, is it? Because this is the idea. It was, just do this and this and this and this. And what I want to do is delete that guy, so let's go back up. create a service. Check I've got the right one this time. Demo 1, Jumpstart Demo 1. Backend, JavaScript, Node.js, region, North Europe. Ah, man, I've just realized, right. manage.windowsazure.com. Onion Squiggly, this is how you, I'm doing a quick demo, how you quickly delete a mobile service and then create it so your demo will work. So, okay, filter my subscriptions, get the right ones, apply. Mobile services, jumpstart demo, delete, go away, delete there from as well. So that's deleting, 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 should I hopefully not take too long. Still deleting. Did anybody see the thing about the internet going slow? This net neutrality thing. Apparently a lot of the big sites are kind of simulating what it would be like if we had this two-tier internet. I think maybe I'm on the slow channel today. That's probably what's happening.
They do yet to prove a point.
Yeah, they are, yes. Oh, would you believe that? Right. That's failed. Okay, I'm going to move on. I do apologize for that. The demo script says here, it says, easily click on this and then just say okay and then tell them how easy it is to create a mobile service and easily add it to your solution. Actually, it doesn't say any of that, but not having a lot of joy here, so I do apologize. I'll try once more, but I'm going to move on because otherwise it's going to get really tedious. I'll keep one eye on that. We can always come back to it. Right, so that was a great demo, awesome demo of Windows Azure Mobile Services, but when you don't make silly mistakes like I did there, it is really a great way of getting a mobile backend onto your app. So let's move on, and I'm going to talk about something else that's crucially important for universal apps, which is sharing state across devices. So there is, how many of you have built any universal apps yet? A few of you, okay, so... how many of you have built a Windows phone app and a Windows store app? Okay, all right, so yeah. Now, okay, so the deal here is the whole thing about the universal apps is it makes it really easy, relatively easy, to create an app that will run on both your tablet and your phone. Actually, even if you just create a phone-only app or a tablet-only app, this still applies because there is in the API set, when you can write stuff away, storing stuff away onto storage, you've got a number of different places. There's the local folder, which is just on that device, just for that app, just on that device. There's the temp folder, which, as its name suggests, is somewhere you can just dump stuff, but the OS will clean up every so often. There's also the roaming folder, and there's also this roaming settings, which is just a string value dictionary. So you can write stuff into there, and what's really cool about this is that if you have the same app, and by that I mean an app that's got the same, you'll see this term PFN, package family name, basically means it's got the same reserved name in the store, then the system will automatically synchronize anything you stick in roaming folder or roaming settings across all of those devices where that app is installed. So it's a really cool way of allowing a user to enter some preferences on one device, their background color, or enter some creds, or enter some preferences, or enter the last details of a search, and then they pick up another device, maybe another phone, or maybe more likely a tablet, and run the same app, and those settings are already in there. So this is a really great continuous experience for users. And the way it works is it just actually stores it in OneDrive. So you just read and write to this dictionary as if it was just local files. It sticks it up in the user's OneDrive. The user never sees it. You can't see it if you go onto OneDrive and look around for it. It is up there, and it doesn't take anything away from their quota. But in actual fact, you're limited to only 100K anyway, so it's not a super amount of storage. 100K of roaming data per app, and actually, if you go over that, it just stops synchronizing. So it's up to you. You've got to have to manage that data and use it carefully. So it really is not a full-blown data synchronization engine. What it is for syncing settings and low volumes of stuff. And it uses push notifications to send this stuff around under the covers. So the infrastructure is already there. And if the app is running on one of the other devices and the data gets synced, gets updated, you can subscribe to an event, a data changed event that will fire, so your app can then refresh using the new settings that have been stuck in that roaming folder. So this is the roaming settings. It's actually windows.storage.application.data.current.roaming settings gives you an object that points at that folder. It's just like a storage folder. And then you can store stuff into the roaming settings dictionary, roaming settings.values, just give it a key. There is one special key value called high priority. If you use that key on Windows devices, that will cause an immediate sync up to OneDrive. So it's a super high priority. So you can have just one key of that item. On Windows Phone 8.1, you can obviously still use that key value, but instant sync doesn't actually happen. It will just be treated like any other item. The roaming settings, and then this is how you actually read stuff out. It's just a regular string-valued dictionary, so you can pull it out. And this is the data changed event. There's the windows.storage.application.data.current.data changed. And that allows you to get an event when something has changed. So it's not, it's just last writer wins, so there's no conflict detection or anything, so you need to make sure you manage how you use this. But it's great for most recent activity and settings and that sort of thing. So let's see if I can show you how that works. Let's kill that disaster. Now, have any of you heard of a guy called Rob Miles? Anyone? Anybody seen the Windows Phone 7 jumpstart? So Rob Miles is a good friend of mine. He's a lecturer at Hull University in the UK, and he's a Python-esque, larger-than-life character. He's a really lovely guy, really likable. But he's got this particular. Every demo he ever writes has got something to do with cheese. So this one he wrote the original version of it, and it's called Cheese Warning. And it's a universal app. So we got a Windows Phone and a Windows client. It's got a shared everything actually. All the logic is in here in mainpage.xaml. I'll just run it on my Windows box. And all it is you can set a cheese warning. We're running low of cheese, you see, so you can set a warning and then the changes something in the setting and the screen goes red. Say, buy more cheese, and you bought more cheese, and actually that's it. So that's really exciting, isn't it? But the logic behind it is more interesting because down in main page, here we go. On Navigated 2, we just do an update status. So update status, here it is. Or it goes off to the roaming settings. And if the roaming settings contains a key value called cheese warning, it sees whether the value is set or something else. And if it's set in that roaming dictionary, then we get the red thing and we need cheese. Otherwise, it's green and we've got cheese. And those buttons, those two buttons on the screen, one of them set warning, just simply wrote into the roaming settings the keyword set for that dictionary value, and the other one wrote in clear for that one. So we just use a very simple example of using the roaming dictionary. And of course, currently, where were we at to with the We're green on that one. The Relax We Got Cheese is green on there. And there is also a phone version, which is running the exact same page. Oh yeah, hang on, I need to do this on a device. So I've got my phone here, because for debugging these sort of thing, they need to be devices that are connected to the same Microsoft account, of course. They both need to log. So this is my personal, one of my personal phones. On here, I haven't got the app, so I'm going to actually just install the app onto here as well. And this is coming up now, hopefully. Come on, go on. It's registering the application. It's running now. So here we go. And this one says, Relax, We Got Cheese. But they're not linked at the moment. So now we're red on the phone. But we're green on the other one. Just to prove the point. Go over to the Windows one. And they're not linked together in any way, but they are running the same code. So green on that one. Now, how do we then link them together? Well, it's very simple. So all you have to do is you right-click on one of them, and you say store, associate app with the store. So this is when they talk about PFN. This is what you're going to do. So we're going to say it's already signed in as andywigley@hotmail.com. Yeah, we're good with that. And, oh, you're kidding me. God, the demo gods are just, they hate me today. What? Next to sign in. Well, I already am signed in. Okay, if you want my password again, I'll give you my password again. Whatever. Oh, yep. That's the little known email provider. Thank you very much. Okay, signing into the store. Oh, God's sake. I'm glad I'm giving you this entertainment this afternoon. So, right. And now it's going to text me a code. Unfortunately, I've got a good phone signal. And there it is. Thank you. So the code is 7816. Oh, it's gone. Is it gone? 7816. 262. It's a one-time code, that, so it's no good. I'm not bothered about you knowing that. There we go. And now, hopefully, it will let me in the store. Thank you. Good. Right, I'm in the store. And then it's going to list the names I've already got reserved for various things. Let's choose a name. Let's call it Cheese Warning. NZ. There we go. That's the new name. So reserve that. Do you think there might be an app out there with that name? Unlikely. Who knows, though? So we're going to reserve that name, Cheese Warning NZ. And what it will do is, let me go next. And it'll say, now this is what it's now going to associate this app. And it's going to add some files in here. So it's actually added in this package.store association.xml with all this kind of stuff in it. So it's associated it under that name. So that name is now associated. I've got a year to publish my app under that name. And then you just have to go and do the same with the Windows Phone one. Because they published their independent, associated that with app with the store as well. And I'm already signed in. Don't ask me for credentials again. Ah, thank you. And we just choose, all you do is choose the same name. That's all it is. It's getting the list from my dev account. And Cheese Warning NZ. There we go. I'm going to reserve that one. It's the same name. Associate it with the phone app as well. They're both now linked. So we can deploy this guy to deploy this to the target device, to my phone. Okay, so it's over there, and I can run the Windows one. So I'm going to run that. And at the moment we're indeterminate, so I'm going to say we're going to go red on there. And then I'm going to go over to my phone, and we're going to run the same app over here. I just already did deploy it, so and it will be in this list as cheese warning NZ. There it is. So here we go. At the moment, it's indeterminate because we've only just this is the first time we've installed it. It probably ought to update in a second. Now, again, this is the trouble with this is that, so where's cheese warning NZ? That's still red over there. So anyway, I'm going to set this to green on here. And the way you can debug this, so it does do it on a best effort basis, but if I now, I'm going to just lock this phone, I'm just going to simply turn it off, and now the other one, that's one, when you put it go to the lock screen, that will cause the settings to synchronize. And so in just a minute, the way things are going this afternoon, anything could happen, but in theory, what should happen is that it will synchronize through this super fast internet thing that I'm connected to through the cloud, and it's all amazing, and it's almost as good as Azure Mobile Services. Come on. Well, that could be so. I mean, actually, I am connected to the speaker network, which we're told is a separate connection and things, because obviously you know what it's like when you get a geek conference. If the networks get kind of, you know, overwhelmed. Actually, what had happened was, you know, I was saying about last writer, you know, wins and this sort of thing. This one had gone red, so I've now set it to green on the phone, and now actually I've just put it on lock again. So I'm now feeling moderately confident that this one's going to change in a second. Otherwise, I'm going to cry. Dun, dun, dun. The power of the internet. I'm sorry. This one I've got on New Zealand time. We're all good. Even though it's like 4 o'clock in the morning where I come from. And it's less than impressive. But I'm going to do some slides, and I'm going to keep watching that, and then I'll switch back as soon as it changes. I promise you, as soon as it changes, I'll switch back. So I'm going to keep talking about something. Now, if the wonderfully effective roaming data doesn't give you what you want, obviously OneDrive from what it is 100K, so you can't actually put a huge amount of stuff on there. So you got obviously there's the live SDK where you can store stuff, files and stuff in the user's OneDrive. That one obviously is completely visible. So the user will see that. So the potential for the user going in and deleting files is always there. But nonetheless, as long as you tell them you're doing, you can store stuff in there. HTTP client. Okay, so getting down to low-level networking now. HTTP client API, really easy to, it's a very rich API, so it's really easy to add headers, like this default request headers.accept. Try parse add, it will actually check that the string you're trying to set the header to makes sense for the particular header that you're doing. And then there's simple methods like get string async. So that's in its simplest usage, it's really, really easy. Now beware though, there are two HTTP clients. There is system.web.http client, which is system.net.http.http client is the older one, the .NET one. But the windows.web.http client is the WinRT API. It's the newer one, and it's much more capable. So make sure you're choosing the right one. If you want to get the full response, obviously you can drill down and get the, instead of using get string async, you just use the get async, and that will give you access to the full response. You can go and dig in and get headers out and that sort of stuff. And this is how you can read your response headers. Just response.headers, so you can go in and pull all of those out nice and easy. And similarly, you can write request headers with try, parse, add, like user agent and this sort of thing. And there are, it's all strongly typed, unlike the older API where it was all kind of, you just had to get the string right and it was much more error prone. And send a request. So no great surprises here. Send request async, nice and easy. Now where it gets more interesting is they think about this HTTP client as being this big, long filter pipeline. So you've got, there's the kind of methods in HTTP client, and then you can actually plug stuff in at any point of that one. HTTP request message, HTTP response message. And then this HTTP-based protocol filter is also a filter, and you can plug stuff in there. But there's one that comes out of the box, which is really great, which is really capable. And you can set loads of properties on it. So if you look halfway down there, you can set password credentials. So this is where you can do your HTTP basic and plug in your username and password into the HTTP call. But the line above that as well, filter.automatic decompression extrude. So it's got automatic decompression built in. It's not turned on by default. So definitely you want to do this and make sure that you're using compression on the wire. Very, very important for mobile apps to have your transfers across the network as efficient as possible. And then you just create the HTTP client, passing in this base protocol filter and make your call. And the protocol filter will plug itself into the pipeline and do its magic. Here's one I just discovered the other day, which is quite interesting. Another thing on the HTTP-based protocol filter. That one has the cache control read behavior, so you can control HTTP caching in here and plug that in. And that's kind of the next topic I want to get onto is about efficiency on the network. So I've got a little demo from that. This is still not working. Oh, look, it worked. There you go. Oh, well, the reason what's going on, man? Right, it wouldn't even let me. Alt tab wasn't even working. And it's like, oh my God, what's going on? I don't believe this. Right. Next in my series of non-functioning demos. Next one does work after this. But this one's very simple. So it's incredibly simple. So I'm just going to run this on an emulator. And all this little thing does is just to show you, it's a simple example of HTTP client. And you've got a text box there where you've got a URI, and then there's a load button. And all that happens on the load button here is we new up a HTTP-based protocol filter. I'm going to set the cache control, cache read behavior to default. So default means... I'll do that in a minute. Default means it's going to it'll cache things by default, and it will use the cache one if it can. So, and then we call get async, and it's going to go off. And the point here is that you can make a call over and over, and not change your code. But the first time I do this, of course, it's going to go over the internet. The source is network. It's gone over the network to satisfy this request. These are all the headers that were on that request that have come back. Cache control is private, and this all this kind of stuff. Now, if I hit it again, it's exactly the same code, but this time it's going to get it straight out of the cache. So it means you can actually have you don't have to do any write custom code to cache the response and all that complicated stuff. It's another example of how the APIs are helping you to create efficient applications. Now, obviously thereafter, it's just getting it from the local cache. That in itself isn't terribly interesting. So this is just the beginning. So the more interesting one, and I haven't got a sample of it, but if you look at the options for here, there's a most recent. And this one uses the local cache if possible, but it will always actually go and ask the server. It puts the HTTP, the last cache date in the HTTP headers, will send that to the service, And you have to have the logic in the service. So if you've written a web API service, you get that header and you can check whether the response has changed or not. And if your response hasn't changed, the data that you were going to send back, if it's the same as it would it was the previous occasion, you can just send back an HTTP 403, which means that nothing's changed. And then it will automatically get it from the local cache. But otherwise, it will go and make another call, and we'll get the new response back. So this can really make your code much more efficient in terms of making cached calls across the network. And efficiency is something I want to just go on a little bit about now. It's about making smart decisions about data transfer. So these mobile devices are often connected to poor quality network connections. So we have to still, 4G is rolling out, and I guess probably pretty fast here in Auckland. And in the UK, major cities will get 4G, so London and Manchester and places, and actually even Llandudno, near where I live, has got 4G. But it's still a rarity, and outside of that, it can go from down to all sorts of rubbish 2G, poor quality, especially up in the mountains. So you need to stack the cards in your favor when you're building a networked application. If you're going off to a web service and pulling stuff back, you can actually do quite a lot to make the user experience much better. And the first one is keep your data volumes as small as possible. So too often a service kind of gets created by some group over there, and they create all they might create nice RESTful methods, and they're serving you all this data. And in the client app, actually, you only need 5% of that data. But because you're all lazy, you're still going to pull the whole thing back and then just extract the data you need. Well, wouldn't it be better, if you can, to have a method on that service that will give you just the data you need, that's kind of, that allows filtering or something like that? And also on the wire, think about when data goes from your server to your client, it's going to be serialized in some format on the wire. So, use the most compact format you've got, JSON instead of XML, and avoid doing large data transfers. And I've got a nice demo that really illustrates that. So this one, OData service. Any of you work with OData? A couple of you? Yeah, OData's really cool, actually. Let's view in the browser. So this is our old friend, the Northwind database, been around forever. And I've got the Northwind database behind this, and this OData service is serving up all the data in the Northwind database. So you get at the top level, at localhost port 1494, northwind.svc, you actually get kind of the directory of all the tables that are in this this service. And to a navigator, you simply just change the URI. So if you want to go off to suppliers, you just put suppliers on it, and then it'll give you a list of the suppliers. If you want just the second supplier, you can go something like suppliers 2, and that will give you just that one. And if you want to know what products, it actually gives you a lot of information as well. You see here, it gives you href that allows you to navigate the relationships between tables. So suppliers supply products. So if you want to know what products this one supplies, you can effectively do a foreign key lookup and say, okay, for this supplier, what are the products? And you just get a list of those products. So it's very flexible, and OData gives you this kind of, it sends back to the client, if you want it, all this information that allows you to navigate the collection as well. So we can use that in our applications. So over here, I've got the other interesting thing about this OData service, the way that, this isn't built with web API, so it's changed a little bit, but with this, which was the previous way of building these things, you can actually ask for XML or JSON, and also in different ways. So all that is by changing the request header. So I've got some breakpoints on each of these buttons. So we're using HTTP client. I'm getting the ATOM feed format, the XML format, and there's no headers on it. So this is the default ATOM feed. And the interesting thing is you can look at the payload, which is all this stuff here. It's actually exactly what we just looked at in the browser there. And each of these, I'm just interested in how big the payload is. So it's 28K. Now, by just changing a header, by putting a application/JSON on the accept header, then we get JSON back. And there's this OData equals verbose, which used to be the only way that it did it. Now, in JSON, it's exactly the same data. We're still getting back the supplier's data from Northwind, but it's serialized as JSON, not XML. And that's much more efficient. So that one is 15K. But it gets better. So if we just change the headers a little bit more, so now it's just application/JSON, so not that OData equals verbose. So what it does now is it strips out all of that cross-reference stuff, all of that stuff that allows you to navigate the collection. So you're getting just the data. That's all you're getting. And this time, and remember, this is still the supplier's data. So we're getting the same raw data that we're interested in back. And now we're down to 8K. And the last example of this is I've actually got it on the wire. It's actually been zipped, so it kind of looks like that over the wire. So now it's compressed, and this one is 4K, and that's the same data. So, you know, which would you use? It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it, really? And just to illustrate that even more, one of the nice things we've got in the tools is the ability to simulate different quality of networks. So we can actually say, instead of this super fast broadband we're on at the moment, I can say, I'd like you to pretend to be a 2G network, but at least good signal strength. It's a good signal strength 2G network. So if I now hit the most verbose one, and we can just count how long it takes. I'm hitting it now. So it's 4 seconds. It took 4 seconds to get that data back over this simulated 2G network. And obviously use the most compressed one, and I hit it, and it's less than one second, half a second for the same data. And so over a poor quality network, you're really, and this is a tiny amount of data. So if you expand that out to a more realistic workload that you're going to be pulling down from a service, you can see the benefits of compression on the wire and using like JSON compared to XML. So if you can, and you control the service, you know, you really need to do this. Actually, even if you don't control the service, think very hard about putting your own service in the cloud to act as a gateway, because you can always call your service could then call the other service that may be a third party service that you don't own, get the response back, and it can format it into what how you want, and you just send back to your clients the compressed data, only the data that you're interested in. Okay, so right, next, I'm just going to, now we're going to switch tack. So let's talk about Bluetooth LE. So there's a couple of interesting things in Windows Phone 8.1 and the Windows 8.1, both about NFC and Bluetooth, and I'm afraid it's been a bit of a sorry tale up till now. Because I've got three phones that I typically work with, in order to do Bluetooth LE, it's been an unfortunate thing with Lumias, because when Windows Phone 8.0 GDR3 went out, they put in Nokia put in they were Bluetooth LE capable phones, right? The operating system was Bluetooth LE capable, but we didn't have any SDK, so Nokia put in their Nokia Black, Lumia Black update, they put in their own drivers for Bluetooth LE and things. And this has allowed things like the Adidas MyCoach app to be able to talk Bluetooth LE to their wearables. And so you can get a pace monitor and distance monitor stuff working. And that was cool, except that when we released 8.1, we've now got a generic API. So we've got stuff in the SDK that allows you to do this kind of thing. But it means that devices that have been upgraded to 8.1, usually through the Preview for Developers program, and they haven't yet got Lumia Cyan, which is the proper update that's going out to consumers, you can't do Bluetooth LE yet because there's Nokia Black still in the way. So last week I was kind of planning this talk thinking, okay, how am I going to do this Bluetooth LE demo? Because at the time I had no devices with Cyan on. And even as I was kind of thinking, I'm going to have to borrow a HTC device or something like that. fortunately an update. This one is the only one of my devices that's not on the dev preview program. And just as I was thinking, oh, how am I going to do this? The update came through. So I've got Cyan. Woohoo! So this is the one I'm going to use for this. And my other devices are still on Lumia Black, so I can't do it. And the other thing is the NFC. There's really cool stuff in NFC as well. I believe some other manufacturers, just announced some phones with NFC on at last. We've had NFC for quite a while. In Windows Phone 8.1, we can do lots of really cool stuff with NFC. But again, we need new devices. There's a new chipset that's needed. So the new devices that were announced at IFA last week, the new one, what's the new one called? The 835, is it? Whatever. Anyway, the new topic, that's got the new NFC chipset in it, which is going to allow us to do things like read transit cards and bank cards and interesting stuff like this. But anyway, this Bluetooth LE then, we can do, there's four things we can do now. We can do app to device, we can talk app to app over Bluetooth LE. We've got Bluetooth RF COM, so RF COM's like often called serial port emulation. And we got the Bluetooth GAT, General Attribute Services, for accessing Bluetooth LE. So Bluetooth LE, otherwise branded as Bluetooth Smart, is this new hyper-efficient, very, very battery-efficient, low data rates, but very efficient way of connecting two devices. So I've actually got a smart luggage tag here, this little round thing. It's got a little one of these little watch batteries in it, and that will run 6 months easy without you having to change the battery. And a lot of other devices are coming out. They're actually sealed. So I went to a talk yesterday which was talking about Internet of Things, and the statistic was put forward that actually within, by 2020, they reckon there's going to be 8 devices connected to the Internet, Bluetooth, or 8 devices, sensors connected to the Internet for every single person on the planet. So just think about that for a minute. 8 billion... it's phenomenal. So we're moving into a very exciting time where there's lots of sensors available, there's lots of devices we can connect to. So we're really at the start of that with our devices, but we've got this capability of talking to devices like this from our phones. A couple of things you need to know about programming it. So the Bluetooth generic attribute profile, you have to put this in the capabilities. Now we have a capability editor in the Visual Studio, but unfortunately it doesn't, the GUI doesn't support this, so you have to go in and actually edit this manually, and I'll show you an example in a minute. So you have to put in it's well documented, the capabilities format that you need to put in. And then you can talk to a service, and here's a simple example of a Bluetooth LE thermometer service. So first of all, you go in and say, okay, find me all the Bluetooth device health thermometer services that our phone is connected to. And then we go to the GAT characteristic to get the thermometer characteristic, and then we can hook up a value changed event on that, and that's to be notified. So you get, this is in the foreground app, getting notified as the thermometer changes from the device. And then it carries on in the measurement changed. You know, you can get the raw data, which typically comes as a byte stream, and you have to know what the data is, the format is that the device sends back. You kind of decode it, and you'll get the actual temperature out of it. So this is an example of the kind of stuff that you can do. Now I'm going to talk to my luggage tag. So back to my machine. We're done with that. Done with all this. And this thing is called Keep the Keys. So I've got this running on my device. I'm going to bring up the... project my screen so you can see what's going on. Let's run this. I'm going to switch into... I've got breakpoints on this, so that we can walk through the code. Called Keep the Keys. Now, when it's launching, first of all, here we go, for each. Now, this is where, first of all, before I let that run, I wanted to show you that I've got on this device... Oh, that's interesting. You're debugging. You can't do anything on the screen. That's kind of interesting. What it's doing is going to do for each, it's going to do a device information find all async. It's going to look for Bluetooth LE devices that we are paired with. Okay, so it's going to look for which devices we're paired with. And then it's going to get our Bluetooth LE device from IDE Async. So we're looking for our particular device that we're connected to. And I'm newing up a class called KeyFob, which is just a class I've got in here which describes my Bluetooth LE device. And this has got all the logic encapsulated in it for talking to this device. And I've got a couple of breakpoints in there which we'll hit in a minute. And we're going to go off now and enumerate through these devices. Here's the devices I can tag on, hit on that one. This is where we can control the particular device. So I'm going to, I've already got a set device alert level on the link loss. So I could clear that. And now we're going to actually talk to the device. So this is how you can talk to a Bluetooth device. We do some background task registration stuff. And then here is where we go off and hit. So now I'm going to hit create the phone notification. And this is going to set up the background task to which will fire an alert when we lose connection to the device. And we can close the app off, and I can remove the battery from this thing. And as if we're moving a walking away, we've left our keys behind, and what we will get on the phone is an alert. It's just come up at the top. Device VTag is out of range. So this is as if you've left your keys behind, you've walked away, and we've got a background task that's firing when the link to the device has dropped. So we've got all this device loss connection link detection stuff on there. And similarly, the other stuff that app can do is you can actually program the device to raise an alert as well if the phone is lost, so it can bleep as well. So it's a nice example. It's Keep the Keys. It's available as one of our samples. A nice example of talking to a device. Right, I'm over time. So summary, you know, Microsoft Azure Mobile Services, despite my ham-fisted attempts to show you how easy it is, great tooling in Visual Studio when you don't screw up to connect to that. We've got HTTP client for lower level stuff, roaming data for synchronizing across devices. Then there's loads of other great APIs like Web Authentication Broker and Credential Locker, which help. And then there was a brief look at the end at Bluetooth proximity stuff. I hope that's given you a flavor of the kind of stuff you can do. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks a lot.